folks, welcome back to Nadav Acker. This is Chris once again. Hello, folks, and welcome back to Chris White Africa. This is Chris coming to you live from central Pennsylvania. Today is the 12th of May, 2021. Let's get to the Nadav Acker news of the day for the 12th of May, 2021. Headlines today, 102 days since the military junta overthrew the democratically elected government in Myanmar, also known to many of us as Burma. It's also been 130 days since the military occupation of the District of Columbia, the United States national capital, by the National Guard. Our national capital under military occupation now for 130 days. South Africa's former Secretary General of the African National Congress, Ace Magashule, thinks he's clever only to be pillared on social media for his less than impressive effort to show how clever he is. South Africa's Clicks Pharmacy, a majority-owned broad-based black economic empowerment corporation recently targeted by domestic terrorists, the Economic Freedom Fighters, last fall over a hair care product ad. Clicks is set to acquire Pick and Pay's pharmacies. Pick and Pay, of course, is one of South Africa's largest grocery chains, which has had pharmacies inside many of their superstores. Now Clicks will be acquiring these locations. A Saudi company is set to build a 11.6 billion rand solar thermal plant in the Northern Cape, a 100 megawatt, nearly 12 billion rand facility. Now, solar thermal is the outdated, out of favor term, which I prefer to use for solar concentrated power. They've changed the term in the industry. I stick with solar thermal. What this is when a large mirror reflects the sunlight to a point to heat molten sand to incredibly hot temperatures, stored underground so that it works throughout the night and then it's used to create steam. South Africa's small business development minister, Ntshavheni, is pushing protectionism in South Africa. Kasada Capital is set to acquire the 414 Key Safari Hotels and Conference Center in Windhoek, Namibia. And the opposition in Zimbabwe is concerned about an imperial presidency under Emmerson Mnangagwa. Beijing reassures Monrovia about its commitment to bilateral relationship with the West African country. And in news here in the United States, Wyoming's lone representative in the House of Representatives, its single congresswoman, Liz Cheney, has been booted on her ear. Liz Cheney, wildly unpopular in the state that elected her foolishly in November of 2020, was bounced today from a leadership position in the Republican caucus in the House of Representatives. Defiant to the end, she no longer holds that position. Former Senator Ted Kennedy must be rolling in his grave. Despite his elitist, leftist tendency to prevent the creation of an offshore wind farm off of Cape Cod, Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts, thereby blighting the view of the anointed elites who live in these leafy, wealthy environs of Cape Cod and Martha's Vineyard, Ted Kennedy successfully prevented the creation of a wind farm there for decades. He must be rolling in his grave today as the Biden administration is now approving the construction of this wind farm off of Martha's Vineyard. 800 megawatts. I felt as if I woke up in Hong Kong. These are the words of Canadian immigrant, Polish immigrant to Canada, and Pastor Artur Pawlowski, who was detained and imprisoned for the egregious crime of holding a church service by the anti-Christian, fascist, tyrannical authorities in Canada. Taiwan's Gigabyte Technology is facing a potential boycott on mainland China for its products after a cheeky ad in which it complained that China produced inferior products. White House reporters will have to get quotes approved by the fascist Biden regime's press office before they can print them. Android 12 is coming, announced in February. More details released on the upcoming update to mobile telephone systems, operating systems around the planet. The most popular operating system for mobile phones today is Android, and that update is coming, but not just for mobile phones, but also for tablets and other small devices like that. And once again, we're covering the story about the Kazangula Bridge between Botswana and Zambia. as the media continues to wake up to this reality. I first reported this several days ago with the opening of it with President Masisi from Botswana and President Lunga from Zambia on both sides cutting ribbons to open and celebrate this $260 million bridge, which Lunga attributed to the Chinese, but the Chinese aren't the ones who financed. The Japanese Development Corporation and the African Development Bank are the ones who financed this project. And so if you want to thank the people of Japan and thank the rest of Africa for their kind generosity to finally, after decades of talk and no action, a Kazangula Bridge, which skirts Zimbabwe's claim to the Zambezi River in a nice little arc. This bridge, which has two-way traffic plus a rail line in the middle and pedestrian traffic on both sides, is a lovely, lovely addition to the Chobe-Zambezi confluence, where the Zambezi goes forward. And those are the headlines in today, the 12th of May, 2021, folks. Let's get into a little more depth and detail as to what's actually happening in the news with some analysis. And let's get right to it. 102 days since Myanmar's coup. There's some photographs here from The Guardian. You're seeing a beat-up protester there, bloodied, black, closed eyes, and security forces detaining him. More photographs of armored personnel carriers rolling down the street. Those photographs courtesy of Agence France-Presse. And while Myanmar deals with its own military junta, here in the United States, our nation's capital remains under military occupation with absolutely no justification whatsoever. This horrific virtue signaling and messaging by the propagandistic regime in power today is unacceptable. Meanwhile, in South Africa, cast aside ANC former Secretary General Ace Magashule is thinking he's being clever. And he has a photograph of himself posted on social media in which he's playing chess. He thinks that was clever. Nowhere to go. Russia's Kasparov calls out Ace's rookie chess move in photo op. Suspended ANC Secretary General Ace Magashule's chess move was mocked on Twitter by Russian chess grandmaster Garry Kasparov. Russian chess grandmaster and former world chess champion Garry Kasparov took aim at suspended ANC Secretary General Ace Magashule after he shared a photo of himself playing chess. The now viral video, which has been liked more than 10,000 times, was shared by Magashule on social media after he was suspended last week. According to Times Live, Magashule can be seen playing white and trying to move a pawn that has no legal opening. It wasn't long after that when a person with a Twitter handle, StarAngKB, asked Kasparov what the strategy was called. And KB says, Kasparov, a friend of mine and I have been trying to figure out what this opening sequence strategy is called with white pieces. And he'd say, I would call this the photo op opening. Whoa, slam. Well, you see when leftists try to virtue signal and they're not particularly bright, you think you can just sit down and do anything on chessboard. Ace Magashule, a man of limited intelligence, obviously. What a shame. Meanwhile, the ANC's step-aside policy is confusing, folks. It's absolutely confusing people. Let's talk about that briefly. The paradox of step-aside, ANC legislators will still be required in the House to vote, but not to speak. This story by Marianne Martin from the Daily Maverick. To be away from Parliament on leave longer than 15 consecutive sitting days requires a motion in the House, according to Rule 36, that must state the reason for the request and period for which the continued leave of absence is sought. And such motion may be rejected. Unauthorized extended absence from sittings in the House can lead to losing one seat in the parliamentary benches, according to Rule 37. Well, Bongo and 11 others in Parliament have been told to step aside by the ANC because you see, once again, ladies and gentlemen, as I have said endlessly, in South Africa, it's not the people, the polity, it's not the country that's paramount. It is the venal, corrupt, racist African National Congress, political party over nation, over people. The ANC cares about itself. And so its rules, which are quite clear and call for members accused of crimes to step aside, has never been enforced until now. Now it's being enforced and we find out that it runs afoul of parliamentary procedure in South Africa's duly elected parliament. So in order to comply with the ANC's party rules, which the ANC seems to think supersede the nation, they do not. Newsflash, Lutuli House, you are a political party. Shut up, sit down, and be quiet. If you want your members suspended from parliament, then take a vote on it. Take a vote on it and follow parliamentary procedure. The ANC still thinks that party over people. We're talking about Clicks here, set to acquire Pick and Pay's pharmacy. Pick and Pay, one of the largest grocery chains in South Africa, has had pharmacies inside of its superstores, and now Clicks is buying that. It planned to acquire 25 in-store pharmacies, their drug stocks, and staff from retailer Pick and Pay. Said the sale, subject to regulatory approvals, would not have a material impact on the earnings or financial position of either of them. No, most likely it's simply going to remove what has been an inconvenient responsibility for Pick and Pay. They no longer have to focus on a small number of pharmacies. Let Clicks handle that. That's their specialty. And it would not have any major impact on the revenue stream of either company. Just 25 locations is not significant, but it could lead to better service potentially for customers going to Pick and Pay. We shall see. A Saudi Arabian company is apparently involved in a nearly 12 billion rand program to create a solar thermal or solar concentration plant in the Northern Cape. This has been appointed as the lead arranger, senior lender, and hedge provider for multi-billion rand concentrated solar power tower project in the Northern Cape. There's an image of a similar one. Morocco famously has a massive project like this, two of them in its own country. The bank said the 100 megawatt, 11.6 billion project is being developed by ACWA Power of Saudi Arabia, which forms part of the Saudi or the South African Renewable Energy Independent Power Producers Procurement Program. Wow, REAP. Generate solar power using mirrors known as heliostats to concentrate a large area of sunlight into a small area known as a receiver. Electricity is then generated when the concentrated light is converted to solar thermal energy. Read that to be the heat is used to heat water to release steam to turn turbines, the way we've been generating electricity for almost two centuries. An important feature of the Redstone CSP project that will have 12 hours of full load energy storage, which will enable the plant to reliably deliver a stable supply to more than 200,000 South African homes during peak demand periods, even after the sun is set. As many as 2,000 jobs could be created during construction, 400 for the local community, while 560 will be created over a period of time once the power plant is fully operational. As I mentioned, solar thermal or solar concentrated plants take the heat from the sun, reflect it to a point, heat up this molten salt, which is then stored underground and used to, throughout the day it's used, and then at night stored underground because there's no sunlight, but it remains warm, and that is used to create steam, which turns the turbines, thereby creating a stable 24-hour-a-day operation. It's quite an effective means to do it. The Sahara could power all of Europe and potentially most of Africa, if not all of Africa as well, just by building massive solar thermal plants in the Sahara. This has been a project talked about for a number of years, but it would cost somewhere in the order of $500 million, and that's been the stumbling block. South Africa's small business development minister is seeking protectionism. Small business development minister Kumbuduzo Ntshavheni says the department's in talks with the Department of Trade, Industry, and Competition to designate more products under its 100% local content category to support small, medium enterprises in the local manufacturing sector. The minister said when his ministers in the economic sector replied to oral questions in the National Council of Provinces on Tuesday. However, the Department of Trade, Industry, and Competition designates certain products for 100% local content, which means the products that are produced in other countries in certain categories cannot be allowed in South Africa because the products that must be in the country are products that are produced locally. For instance, we're working with the Department of Trade, Industry, and Competition to designate more products for 80 to 100% local content to minimize the entrance of other products in the country. This, ladies and gentlemen, is what we call contrary to the World Trade Organization rules. This is a violation of WTO norms, and it's protectionism. It is meant to protect inefficient and oftentimes corrupt local producers of products, many times producing inferior products for the consumer market in South Africa. No one benefits from this. The theory is this protects jobs in the economy, but in fact it does not. It's been proven time and again that such protectionism runs counter. Now, there's a time in a developing country's history when protectionism can make a difference, but South Africa is well past that stage that this will make a difference for benefit to the economy. What this does is protect corrupt patronage friends in the ANC and lets them have their products designated as exclusively local content. There are very few things that South Africa alone can produce. Most of the world can produce pretty much anything South Africa has. In Namibia, the Kasada Capital Group is making a purchase of the 414 Key Safari Hotels and Conference Center, the largest hospitality complex in all of Namibia. They're going to spend over $8 million in additional investment after they've acquired it. It's the second major transaction for Kasada, which continues to build its sub-Saharan hospitality portfolio. Now, this story comes from Johannesburg and Port Louis, Mauritius, as well as Windhoek, because the Kasada capital also is based out of Mauritius. The hotel complex is strategically located within 10 minutes of Windhoek City Center, adjacent to the Aros Airport. It consists of 215 Key Safari Court Hotel, the 199 Safari Hotel, and Namibia's foremost meetings, incentives, conferencing, exhibitions venue, the Safari Court Conference Center, that includes 1,600 square meters grand ballroom that can hold up to 2,400 delegates. Casada will rebrand the hotels utilizing the management skills, expertise, and marketing resources available from its strategic partnership with Accor. That's a French company, and its portfolio of renowned international hotel brands. The Safari Court Hotel will be converted to a Mövenpick, a Swiss brand, and the Safari Hotel will become the Ibis Styles. Ibis is part of the Accor group. By investing $8 million in its refurbishment, Casada will further improve the existing conference facilities that are a hub for local, regional, and international events in Namibia, creating a go-to destination for both business and leisure guests. This is an interesting development that could create as many as 150 jobs. It is interesting to see the Ibis and the Mövenpick brands come to Namibia. That is quite the interesting development here. We'll see how it progresses. Meanwhile, in Zimbabwe, the opposition is concerned about tyrannical imperial presidency. Well, that's exactly where the presidency has been since its creation in 1988 with the new constitution that was replacing that from the independence era. They want to guarantee 20 seats to white minorities in the parliament, which was stricken in 1988. And we went from a system of a prime minister to president under Mugabe. It's been an imperial presidency ever since. But moves of late by Zimbabwe have made it even more concerning, with the president now being allowed to pick his own judges. Mnangagwa is a true student of Robert Mugabe. Mnangagwa's administration has introduced a lot of legislation, including the Constitutional Amendment Bill and the Patriotic Bill, which reflect the consolidation of power by an authoritarian leader and a continuation of Mugabe's legacy. Beki Kizela Gumba, the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute researcher, tells Africa Report. Well, when Emmerson Mnangagwa, also known as the Crocodile, who fled like a coward to South Africa after he claimed that they tried to poison him at a fair, his ice cream, when Mnangagwa, who was cowering in his hotel hiding in South Africa, was illegally brought back to Zimbabwe and installed by Constantine Chiwenga as the president when he had resigned and fled his post as vice president, so he had no legal standing. When that illegal usurpation of constitutional authority took place, I warned everyone, this is simply old wine in new bottles. Mnangagwa came out of the gate pretending that it was a new era, that the repression was over, that democracy could flourish, and that Zimbabwe is open for business. It's been anything but open for business. Still ruled by an oppressive, elite, racist regime that cares nothing about Zimbabweans, the 14 million living in Zimbabwe, or the nearly 5 million forced to live abroad because of the political shenanigans taking place in Cloud Cuckoo Land. The opposition is well-founded to have concerns about an imperial presidency in Zimbabwe. But ladies and gentlemen, the world does not care. Nobody's paying attention to what's happening in Zimbabwe other than me and probably a handful of other people and other journalists around the planet. No one cares. And that's sad, the fate that Zimbabweans are stuck with because the West simply doesn't want to deal with this problem. Meanwhile, in Beijing, Beijing's diplomats in Monrovia have reassured Liberia they are committed to bilateral relations. People's Republic of China, through its ambassador extraordinary and plenipotentiary to Liberia, Ren Yisheng, has disclosed to Speaker Bofal Chambers five post-COVID-19 development packages for Liberia. This was on Tuesday, the 11th. The speaker's visit was reciprocity to the previous visit by the Chinese ambassador to the capital when he delivered a special message from the chairman of the Chinese National People's Congress to Speaker Chambers. During the visit on 11 May, the Speaker lauded the Chinese government for the level of cooperation between the two countries, describing the bond as a win-win. Speaker says he is upbeat that China is now a global player and a world power within the international community and applauded the Chinese people and government for their handling of the pandemic in record time. He has, however, told the Chinese ambassador that Liberia looks forward to encouraging more Chinese investors in the country and the acceleration of projects by the Chinese government. Nicely diplomatic, but very much the wrong direction for Liberia to go. What Liberia should be encouraging is the 300,000 Liberians with deep pockets who are too lazy and too selfish to return to Liberia or invest in it, living in Maryland, Minneapolis, New York, Pennsylvania, London, living abroad in comfort while people in Liberia are suffering. How about you convince those 300,000 people from the diaspora to take their bums back to Liberia and make a positive contribution instead of demanding that we Americans cover Liberia's bottom? That is the role of Liberians. While we're at it, let's send the Liberians who've now had two decades of generous safety here in the United States home to a country that has no conflict and has had no conflict since I lived there in 2007. Well past that time. So instead of kowtowing to the Chinese, how about you jazz up Liberians to get with it. Here in the United States, Wyoming's lone member of the House of Representatives, Liz Cheney, has been booted from her post in a voice vote. Lawmakers vote to remove Wyoming Congresswoman in closed-door meeting over her criticism of the former president. House Republicans ousted Representative Liz Cheney of Wyoming from their leadership ranks in a closed-door meeting Wednesday morning in an effort by the party to extinguish the most visible fight over former president and his role in the party's future. She was removed in a voice vote just about 15 minutes after the meeting started, swift culmination of weeks of building tension within the House GOP. We are unified behind a single mission of winning back the majority. It's clear from the way that the vote occurred that 99% of our members are focused on that. So it's time to move on, said Representative Jim Banks, Republican Indiana, chairman of the Conservative Republican Study Committee. Ms. Cheney, the House's most prominent critic of the former president, had clashed publicly with House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy and other senior Republicans by pushing back on Mr. Trump's claims about the choosing in 2020. Well, it's far more than that. She's disconnected from Wyoming voters. She's not a genuine conservative. She was only elected on name recognition. Her father, Dick Cheney, a long-serving congressman from Wyoming, former defense secretary, and then vice president of the United States. She only got elected on name recognition. She's not a Republican. She's not, well, she's a member of the Republican Party, but she's not a conservative. She's a Republican name only, and she's been booted. It's long overdue. How she ever got elected is beyond me. It showed that the Republicans are not serious about governing this country. They're just part of the political elite who are there for themselves. They're pigs at the trough, just like the Democrats. By booting her, they send a valuable message to other Republicans that perhaps the party is worth salvaging, unlike the Democratic Party. And Ted Turner must be rolling over in his graves, ladies and gentlemen, as the Biden administration approves an 800-megawatt wind farm, an eyesore off the coast of Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Wow, Martha's Vineyard will never be the same. Approval represents the latest shot in the arm for America's fledgling offshore wind sector. U.S. still, however, has ways to go before it catches up with mature markets such as the one found in Europe. Well, we're talking about Denmark and Germany. Germany, which has turned its countryside into an abject disaster, a complete eyesore, ruining medieval villages, destroying them with ridiculous solar panels that generate insufficient, unreliable electricity in one of the cloudiest and most rain-laden countries in Europe. Idiotic, stupid plan to build up a domestic solar panel market, which was undercut by loss-selling Chinese manufacturers, driving the Germans out of business. And now the panels come from China, and they're subsidized by the German government at the taxpayers' expense, and they're eyesores. These windmills are disastrous eyesores. Now, the Danes, for their part, put these in the North Sea, away from the shore, where they generate more power and are more reliable than those on land. But we'll see what happens at Cape Cod. As Ted Turner rolls over in his grave. He fought it for decades. The offshore wind sector took a major step forward Tuesday after authorities gave a green light for the construction operation of the 800-megawatt Vineyard Wind 1 project. The Vineyard Wind project is expected to generate 3,600 jobs and provide enough power for 400,000 homes and businesses. Well, let's get this clear. Just like pipeline jobs, just like the job for the solar thermal plant in the Northern Cape, these are not permanent jobs. These are temporary construction jobs. They're existing jobs, not creating any jobs. That's a lie. It's a myth. It's fiction. It will create a small number of maintenance jobs for the project once it's up, but not 3,600. Let's be honest. According to the Vineyard Wind team, the facility will use GE Renewable Energy's huge Halilade X turbines, which mean only 62 will actually be required. Well, that's interesting. It's a joint venture, 50-50 joint venture between the Copenhagen Infrastructure Partners and the Avangrid Renewables, part of a company based in Spain. It will cost $3 billion and it could be in service by 2023. And there you have it. So wind energy gets a boost here in the United States. Whether it works or not, we shall see. Meanwhile, in Canada, the fascist totalitarian regime in Canada, in Alberta and in Ontario, are oppressing Christians each and every day. I thought I woke up in Hong Kong. That's the quote from the Canadian pastor who was arrested in jackboot thug-like fashion after holding a church service. 1 hour later, run down on the highway, dragged out to the middle of the road to make an example of him and his brother. He was arrested. Canadian pastor Arthur Pavlovsky was arrested Saturday for allegedly violating public health orders by holding church services during the pandemic. Said he felt like he was living in Hong Kong after he was released from jail on Monday night. I just woke up in Hong Kong a few days ago. I mean, I thought I emigrated to our beloved Canada, but I'm in Hong Kong full force. Of course, people in Hong Kong have been fighting for the freedom from the Chinese communists, and they've been oppressed as well. Pavlovsky and his brother were arrested Saturday on a highway by a SWAT team. He and his brother both were released Monday night. Now, what's going on here, folks, is this is the government of Alberta is getting even with the pastor because he's the pastor who famously, about a month ago, when health authorities came into his church to shut down his church, he told them to get out and call them fascist Nazis. And told them to leave and embarrass them. Essentially exposed for the frauds that they were, they walked away. they couldn't stand that political embarrassment because that thing went viral on Facebook and was shared on Twitter and social media platforms all over the world. And the Canadian authorities, particularly the authorities in Alberta, looked foolish, which is what they should look, trying to suppress Christianity. Meanwhile, Taiwan's Gigabyte Tech is facing a potential ban or boycott of its products in mainland China after it mocked the low-quality manufacturing on the mainland. The Taipei-based computer hardware company promoted its products as Taiwan-made. Their laptop advertisement was called out by a youth wing of the Chinese Communist Party. In the advertisement for its latest laptop series that has since been taken down from its website, Gigabyte Technology, a Taipei-based manufacturer specialized in motherboards and graphical processing units said the company insists on making its products in Taiwan, where it boasted strict quality control. Unlike other brands that have opted for low-cost and low-quality contract manufacturing in China, Gigabyte Tech is committed to producing excellent and high-performing components and laptops. As a Taiwan-based laptop and component manufacturer, we ensure that 90% of our laptops are made locally in Taiwan. It drew the attention of the Chinese Communist Youth League, which posts a screenshot and says, Gigabyte, who gave you so much courage? It's on like Junior Rodeo. The Chinese communists don't take kindly to the truth being revealed about substandard manufacturing on mainland China. Yes, mainland China does produce some quality products and has fantastic capability. We see all of the iPhones are made by Chinese, not by Apple or Americans, because Apple, the greedy bastards they are, offshore all their production to China rather than make it right here in America because they like their margins north of 60 to 70%, the greedy bastards that they are, selling their rich white people toys. Yeah. No, China can make good products, but much of the Chinese manufacturing is substandard, as Gigabyte Tech has accurately pointed out. But that was pretty cheeky of them. Meanwhile, apparently the White House press corps must submit quotes for approval before they're able to publish them. Reporters have to get quotes approved by the White House before publishing a report. Biden's hiding strategy. White House reporters are seething over policy that requires them to submit quotes from interviews with Biden administration officials to the communications team for approval, editing, or veto. The White House is demanding that reporters who conduct interviews with administration officials do so under conditions known as background with quote approval. But information from the interview can be used in a story, but the reporter, to be able to attach a name to the quote, the reporter must transcribe the comments and send them to the communications team, and then the White House can reject them. This is press censorship. First, we don't see the Manchurian cadaver ever, and when we do, he stumbles through teleprompters or he has people sitting 40 feet apart from each other, picking only women and people of color overwhelmingly when 40% of the population and 70% of journalists happen to be white males, but there are just a small fraction of those who ask questions or allowed to ask questions by this fascist regime, which hides from the truth. If they are so correct in their policies and so correct in their existence, then why do they fear what their officials have to say? We're not talking about leaked classified information by deep state operatives who are criminal operatives who leaked classified information and did that throughout the Trump administration, criminals who should be prosecuted for divulging classified information. We're not even talking about that. We're talking about public officials interviewed about policy issues that are relevant to the public to know about. Yet the White House press corps must now submit, well, the press must submit quotes. Otherwise, it's just background. That's utter nonsense. Utter nonsense. Meanwhile, the mobile operating system for telecommunications and for tablets, Android 12 version, will be making an appearance. The release date, new features, and everything else we need to know. We're expected to get a first look at the finalized Android 12 next week. Here's what we know so far. Well, I'm eagerly awaiting the arrival of the latest version of the operating system since it was unveiled in February. Can I download the Android 12 beta? It's available for beta, but I don't know if you want to do that and mess your phone up. We'll be able to download when it's generally available. Yes, it will be. What devices will be compatible? Well, the vast majority of phones that are out there will be available, smartphones, but not all. Well, it has app privacy features, redesigned notifications, double tap options, one-handed mode, okay, face-based auto-rotate, trash and recycle bin management. Okay, there you go. There's some of the features on the new Android 12. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, the Kazangula Bridge between Zambia and Botswana is open for business. The $260 million bridge financed by the Japanese Development Agency Corporation and the African Development Bank is an amazing piece of architecture which will lead to vast improvement in trade throughout Southern Africa, not simply Botswana and Zambia. This will allow, the 923-meter bridge will allow rail traffic, vehicle traffic in both directions as well as pedestrian traffic in both directions. It's a beautiful piece of architecture, and it will make a huge impact, alleviating some of the pressure on the Bight Bridge daily crossing between Zimbabwe and South Africa. Bight Bridge between South Africa and Zimbabwe has for years been the busiest border post in the region. Zimbabwe's international trade minister says about 600 trucks pass through that border each day. It's in addition to about 60 buses and 2,000 light vehicles. The commercial traffic alone accounts for monthly revenue of $45 million. But there have been bottlenecks there, not just related to the pandemic, but just related to the volume of people passing through Bight Bridge. So the Kazangula Bridge is a welcome addition to Southern Africa, and everyone will profit from it most likely. With the reduced time waiting to cross between Zambia and Botswana and the queues that have been piling up there waiting for ferries and customs clearance being greatly reduced. We'll see what happens. That's good news. Folks, thanks for tuning in. This is Indaba African News of the Day for the 12th of May, 2021. We appreciate your time, your patronage, and your custom. Please spread the word. Let people know about this. A free service is out there bringing the news about Africa that most neglect with insightful analysis and in-depth analysis. Thank you very much. We'll catch you here next time on Indaba Africa News of the Day.